Hey! Hi, everybody.
Hey.
That was a quick one, huh? Hi, this is Link, and you're listening to the Linux Link Tech Show, episode number 70. Another landmark episode for us. That means that we've been doing this for a long time now. It's a punchy night tonight. Thanks for joining us here on this, once again on this Wednesday night, February 9th, 2005, which
rainy night.
Yeah, rainy night. And it just happens to be my birthday.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yes,
it's,
it is.
It's Lincoln's birthday. Happy birthday to Link. Happy birthday to Link. Happy birthday, dear Link. Happy birthday to Link.
Woohoo!
Cheap bastards we are, didn't buy him a present.
Dan got me a Coke. Yeah.
Yeah! I told my wife, that'll you gotta work. Make that Coke extra special.
You gotta get a Coke and pat over the cider.
Yeah. Hard Spanish cider smells like dirty socks. We're good. All right, everybody, listen up. We'll be right back after these,
exciting messages.
And we got a great show in store for you.
Mike Stutz.
That's right. Mike Stutz is coming. You're like spoiling, man. I haven't even played the message yet.
You're
already telling them what's going on. I just wanted them to listen to Matt Bischoff real quick first. Okay, here he is.
Hey, this is Matthew Bischoff for Escape from the World, and you're listening to the Linux Link Tech Show.
Hi, I'm Matti from Finland, and I'm listening to the Linux Link Tech Show when I'm not wrestling with polar bears.
Rawr! Or pirates, as the Lug Radio fellows often do. Rawr! We're Lug Radio. Rawr.
Dun, 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 dun.
18.
So how old are you?
35.
35? God damn youngins.
You're about the same age as me.
35. Oh, no, no. I am not anywhere near the same age as you because your son is how old?
My son?
Yeah.
He's a year and 3 months.
Pat's son is a year and 3 months old. My daughter is 12.
You got married young.
Therefore, by default, each year your child ages you 4 or 5. Am I right about this, Dan?
So put you at 60,
I got a lot
right?
of gray hair.
45, yeah.
I got my hair cut tonight. Holy mackerel, I saw a lot of gray hair.
I may be 35.
That's all gray.
Yeah, I may be like 35
Grandpa.
Now. But, you know, with that 12 years of my daughter's life has aged me in like another 50 or 60. So, and I fear that it's going to get worse because she's, you know, just about to hit the teenage years. So,
it's all
downhill. It's over, I'm sure. But, yeah, had my little birthday stuff today. They got me a cake at work and balloons. My wife got me balloons.
And, you know, when I picked you up, I saw the balloons over there, but it just never clicked.
Didn't hit you. Like, all the happy birthday balloon shit, like,
until
stuck
until
in the back of my
said,
chair.
Yeah, until your daughter said, make sure they say
noticed.
Something. I'm like,
what?
Oh, okay, those balloons. Yeah, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, the balloons, man.
I just thought maybe like new decorations or something over in the corner. There.
Oh, yeah, I always carry happy birthday balloons over in my corner of my desk. Yeah.
It's, you know, it goes, just, goes along with the, you know, the cow seat cover over there.
Hey, man, don't be picking on my cow. My cow is cool.
I have to get something like that for mine because the towel just doesn't cut it anymore.
See, there you go. Most people do. They buy like a towel and stick
it
on. Cat pulls
it off all the time.
Buy a towel or a blanket or something like that, and you stick it over top of your chair to help keep your chair clean. Dude, I'm telling you, if you buy those the low back seat covers, and you can just like slip them right over, and it works awesome for your computer chair, and it keeps them nice and clean, and you can even be fashionable with it. You know, you could. You can be an indie racer, or you can sit in the cow like I do, or leopard print, or whatever the hell you want.
I'll have to find like the racy kind.
My last one was just like fuzzy black, you know? That was cool. I was a hip computer dude or something.
Dan's intent over there.
Yeah. What are you compiling now, man?
I'm not compiling anything. I'm making sure I got everything set up for this Skype interview with Michael Stutz.
Right. So why don't you talk about that since you were he was dying to talk about that. He was bursting at the seams, man. He was Michael Stutz. Who is this Michael Stutz guy?
Michael Stutz is the author. Well, just talk about something else because I got to
talk about something else.
I'm getting him all worked out. Talk about something else. We're going to Monday. We are all getting together, all of us tech show guys.
It's road trip
That's
day.
That's right. It's Monday road trip day. We're going to get stuff our butts in a car for 6 hours, and we're going to Boston.
Woo-hoo.
Why you say? Because on Tuesday, the Linux World Expo, the very first one.
In Boston.
Is going to start. Actually, it starts on Monday, but, like, it's just conferences and stuff.
But none of us can afford the conference.
We want to go. You kind of sit there and fall asleep anyway. But we really want to go to the little...
Expo.
The expo part of it, right? Right? We want to go
out
there.
We want swag.
We want free stuff, man. That's why you go to the expo. You get free pens and, you know, stuff. But we want to go and, you know, interview some of the people. And I love to get a hold of some of the people and ask them really... pointy hard questions and stuff like that. And
Mad Dog Hall is there. I want to ask him, what the hell does he actually do? That's what I want to
Is he going to the expo?
I don't think he is. He's,
no, he's
going to
be in the California one, right? Yeah. The Southern California.
Yeah, but you usually see him walking around the expo. So.
Which is also...
Hope. Mad
is
Dog.
It, is that this weekend?
We've seen him before.
Is. Yeah, he
the
looks
like the Southern California one?
Yes, it is.
I got an ad for that. Let me play it real quick.
And Bill Gates.
Yeah, you and that one.
So, I'll tell you, man, the dude was there. He looked. He had to be. He was there.
I'm going
to
play this real quick. Hang on.
Whether you are just interested in learning what Linux is, or you're a guru in good standing, there's something for you at the Southern California Linux Expo. We have speakers on introductory topics for beginners, as well as more advanced topics for IT professionals and software developers. We're working on bringing some of the most influential people in open source to scale, including John Mad Dog Hall of Linux International and kernel developer Randy Dunlap. Scale isn't just a business show. We invite local Linux user groups to demo Linux applications, part of the reason Scale has been called the premier grassroots Linux show in the United States. So mark your calendar. Scale 3X, the third annual Southern California Linux Expo, will be February 12th and 13th, 2005 at the Los Angeles Convention Center. For more information, visit our website at socallinuxexpo.com. We will see you there.
We will see you there. Not me. Because that's way too far of a drive from Pennsylvania. But if you are in California or thereabouts, you probably should go to that if you're a Linux person. Because that sounds like the place to be this weekend, right?
Sounds good, yeah.
And if we could just get Pat to, you know, donate the fuel.
His private jet.
His private jet to get us out there.
We need more than the fuel. We need the jet, too.
Unfortunately, my brother doesn't live in L.A. anymore. He lived out there for about 6 years. I've been out there about 4 times, and it's overrated. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Speaking of conferences, if you're going to be in the United Kingdom, Birmingham specifically, sometime around February 25th and 26th, there is an Exim mail server conference being held in conjunction with the United Kingdom UK UUG which I guess is United Kingdom Unix Users Group.
That's what it sounds like to me.
I'll figure it is. Their website, I'll give you information on it on the chat, is uit.co.uk/xm-conference-index.htm/program-ME at the end of program, you know, P-R-O-G-R-A-M-M-E. The right way to spell it.
Program-E.
Like Shoppe.
And Kalua.
Program-E.
Kalua.
So they like us to spread the word, I guess. Well, they wanted me to tell our luck. I don't think anybody in our luck is going to be in the United Kingdom.
None of our luck.
We're lucky
just
to even wake
UK,
up to come to the luck meetings.
How was that one yesterday?
How was the luck meeting yesterday?
It was. You did a good job. Chris did a fantastic job.
I was going to make it, but unfortunately, I had to finish my taxes.
I was going to come, but like I was sleeping, you know.
Yeah, it's always the same thing with those damn meetings. We start off, we got to fiddle around with the projection system and everything to get it to work properly.
Right.
But yeah, this is great, right?
And this is from the computer lab.
This is in the computer lab. They added a new level of computers in the back, a new row of computers, all running Windows 2000. I think we're in Windows XP. But the rest of them in there are all I think there's a couple Linux boxes they added. I'm not sure, but they're all Sun.
Okay.
So Spark stations, right?
Right.
Now, the middle row.
They're running Linux?
No, they're running Solaris. Right. The middle row, the one that has the presentation, everything, the internet connection will not let you get out to the world wide web. It'll let you only get into their intranet. You can't get out to the internet for some reason. But all those Windows machines in the back?
Right.
Right out to the internet. You know how I know? You know how I know? Because we were sitting there and a box came up on one of them and we were like, huh. So I walked over. We looked at it. There was a spam message coming across your Windows Messenger.
Oh, dude.
Saying, whoa, we might be in trouble. We need to get some hot registry fix kit from this website. So you got to figure, why let the Sun boxes only on the intranet, but let the Windows machines go wherever? I don't get that logic. Too bad Flash wasn't there that we could rig them on that.
Oh, yeah.
That's just a shame.
Did anyone take a picture?
Maybe somebody's running a spam service,
making
some money off those boxes.
Towards right as we were about to leave, this guy came in and he started working on the machines. I think he was updating something on all of them. He was running something. I've never seen a person in that machine to work on that room to work on the Solaris machine. But this is the first time I ever saw those Windows boxes in there, and there was a guy working on them that night. What the heck?
It's because the Sun boxes just work. I mean, what's Unix?
Well, you know what time it is.
What time is it?
It's quarter of nine. It's time for us to give Michael Stutz a call. He's our guest on the show tonight, in conjunction with Pat, who's over there.
That's right.
We'll be talking to Michael Stutz, who is the author of the Linux Cookbook.
Pat's our PR guy.
And he's written some articles over there on O'Reilly's website, particularly focusing on Linux user as opposed to administration, being able to do stuff like printing and image manipulation with the GIMP and printing out banners. You got to check him out over there at O'Reilly.com. Look up his name. He's got a handful of articles. So we're going to give him a ring.
But the book isn't through O'Reilly this time. It's through
No Starch Press.
No Starch Press, yes. Which O'Reilly does distribute some of this stuff, but, you know.
Hello?
Hello, Mike.
Yes.
Hi, it's Dan Washko and the rest of the crew, Link Fezzenden and Alan Metzler from the Linux Link Tech Show, and
hi,
Patrick
Mike.
Davila.
Hi,
hey,
Mike, how are you
guys?
It's great to hear from you.
Hey, good to be here.
I trust you can hear us all right with our high-tech setup here. Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
Our low high-tech. You're coming through really great.
Okay, good.
All right. So, Mike, you're the author of the Linux Cookbook. And the second
that's right.
And the second edition just came out.
Yeah, the first one came out in 2001, and now there's a whole new edition that just came out.
All right, and it's a great book. I mean, I've been reading through it, and I think, Link, you're reading through it, right?
I got up to chapter 5, so.
I read through it, and I'll tell you what, my honest impressions are this. For those of you people who have not, you know, those of you Linux people who have not checked the book out yet, go and get it. The I have been saying for years and years and years now, the de facto standard set of books that you should get for Linux when you first start out is the
Running Linux.
Yeah, Running Linux and Linux in a Nutshell by O'Reilly Publishing. Drop those and get this one instead. I found it much more thorough and comprehensive, and it wasn't written in any,
written in tech.
Yeah, it wasn't written in any nasty tech jargon for those of you who have a problem with that. So that was my impressions. I really enjoyed it, Mike.
That's good.
Mike.
Yeah, it's funny. I wrote it, actually, because I wanted a book for just like the everyday person who would take it and be able to say, oh, that's how you do Linux. So, you know, I'm glad to hear those comments that, you know, you picked up on that.
Well, I think that's exactly how it comes across. I also appreciate the fact that, granted that I'm not a new user with Linux, but if you were a new user, there's a lot of information in there. Covers a great number of topics that anybody would want to know getting started. You know, they really have a good reference to do a whole number of things that you would normally want to do with your computer. So I thought was really good.
Yeah, I wanted new users to be able to pick it up from the beginning, and that's why, you know, you probably saw that chapter, What Every Linux User Knows.
Right.
You know, so there should be things that, hey, okay, I just got my Linux box up. What are, like, the top things that I have to know right away? But I hope that there were enough esoteric things in there, and I think there's enough undocumented tricks that, you know, advanced users would be able to say, oh, okay, this is pretty useful.
Definitely.
And what's nice is when it starts out down there at the Bash show.
Yeah, true.
Not at the X. It starts out at Bash. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, it's pretty much, I think it's basically, it's the Linux shell. You know, most distributions will have Bash as the default. So, you know, it's really the shell that you really ought to start out with.
Absolutely.
You know, in terms of teaching Linux. One thing that I thought I should probably mention, too, is that in case the listeners aren't aware, I used Linux to typeset and design the book. So, actually, inside the covers of the book, it's kind of an example of what Linux can do.
Oh, that's cool. What did you use to lay it out and everything?
Well, it was written in Emacs. The screenshots were taken using the import tool, and it was typeset with tech.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that's,
I didn't realize that.
I don't know how many other books out there can claim that they were done exclusively with the software they described, but this one was.
And you just sent that right off to the publisher then? They had no problems?
Yeah. We had to make a special arrangement, but the printer was able to take the PostScript file. It was directly from the tech output. And then they printed it right from that. So it's really nothing but Linux inside.
That's great. That is great.
Yeah.
Now, the second edition is significantly large, you know, more pages than the first edition. I think it's more than twice the size.
Yeah.
For some people who have the first edition, it might be saying, well, how much different could the second edition really be? I think there's a lot of difference in there. What are some of the things that you added the second time around that aren't
okay.
the first?
Okay, well, there's really like three things that are going on right here with this. First of all, every recipe in the first edition was gone through, and literally, I mean, every single one was refined. And as with all publishing, once in a while there are typos, and so, you know, great care was made to correct any errors in the first edition. So everything that was existing before was revised and improved, and if I found new methods that worked better, I replaced the old. And then the second thing that went on was that, you know, obviously I expanded it a lot.
Obviously,
it's not really like there's... yeah, it's it's not so much as there's new chapters. If you'll look and you'll compare it with the first edition, you know, there's not too many new chapters, but you could liken it kind of like to a yardstick, where last time the first yardstick only has feet or you know, inches demarcated, and then in the new one you're going down to tenths of an inch or hundredths of an inch. So there's a lot more detail in the second one, and I think it's, even if the page numbers aren't double, I think including the front matter and the unnumbered pages, it's more than double in size.
Right.
So, and then, oh, and, you know, another big thing I probably ought to mention is that the first edition only really covered Debian as the base. I used that kind of as a base standard. And this time around, I wanted to make sure all the major distributions were covered.
Cool.
You know, so people who have Red Hat or Fedora or whatever, they're not going to be messing around with figuring out, you know, how to install all the tools.
Outstanding.
And if I'm not mistaken, you usually provide the website that you can get the tools from.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, you know, you'll want to just get the source or, you know, go directly to the site for more documentation or the latest updates or whatever.
It's really good. So you're a Debian user, I would say, right?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I am. I started out with Slackware years and years ago.
Yeah!
I've been using Debian pretty much in recent years, pretty much exclusively. Although there's so many distributions out there now and so many good ones.
So how long have you been using Linux?
Oh, boy. This goes back at probably about, I'd say, maybe a dozen years. I knew about it right when Linus was releasing, like, the earliest kernels. But, you know, if you weren't a kernel hacker, there's no way you're going to be using Linux. And I thought, oh, this is really cool, but I let it be, you know. And then a few years later when Slackware was out, you could download it by hooking up your modem and sitting on an FTP site for about 2 days straight, I would do that. But, yeah, so I guess it's been a while. And Linux has come a long way since then.
Oh, yeah. Do you still keep up with Slackware at all?
No, not really, although I understand that, what's his name, Pat Volkening, he's ill or something. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, they've been having.
But no, I know that Slackware is still going strong, and there's plenty of people out there who use it.
They just released 10.1 this week.
Uh huh.
So.
Wow.
Still going.
Uh huh.
Works at my house. I'll tell you that for sure.
Now, your household obviously uses Linux. Do you encourage your, you know, your colleagues, your friends, your family members, are they all using Linux too? Or, I mean, have you gotten them to jump on a Linux bandwagon?
Oh, yeah. You know, I tell everyone that, you know, it's at the point where any home user or any everyday computer user can use it. And that's actually, you know, that's why I wrote the book, was to be able to give the book to someone and say, hey, oh, you want to use a computer for this? You know, well, if you have Linux installed, this is how you do it. That's why it's organized by, instead of by program, it's organized by task. You know, you want to print something out, you want to, you know, do image processing or whatever the case may be, you know, you look at it from a task standpoint. But and in terms of, you know, my field, in terms of writing, I don't know any other system out there that's as good for a writer as Linux, and I'm looking. I mean, if someone has something better, sure, I'll take a look and let's see. But in writing and text processing, nothing's as good as Linux.
Yeah.
Setting people up with for a distribution, what do you usually recommend to them if they're like a new user to Linux?
Well, okay. For a new user, it's actually different than an experienced user. If you're a hardcore Linux junkie, the fact is no one else is going to tell you what distribution to use, because you're going to try several of them and you're going to find out for yourself, you know, which one you like. But in terms of new users, really any of the main distributions at this point will be fine, because when it comes down to it, all the software is exactly the same. A distribution just organizes the software and keeps it current for you. So, you know, if you have Fedora or Mandrake or anything, really, if you're a new user, if you have this set up, then, you know, the software is going to be fine for you. The trick is installing Linux, which, like any operating system, it can be, you know, kind of tricky to install. But once you get over that, you should be fine.
So, do you do a lot of installs of Linux for people, or do you have
them? No, not personally, but I know that, you know, for most people in most areas, you just go to your local Linux user group and ask when the next install fest is, and they should be able to handle that.
Not our Linux.
Yeah, right.
Get people to show up first. We had an install fest one person showed up. No, wait, they didn't show up. That's right. They canceled.
No, it was just you and me, Dan. So other than the install process, which, like you said, to be fair, installing any operating system is not easy, right? So, but other than the install process, what barriers do you think that Linux has yet to overcome? You know, what are the big hurdles that we have to go through?
Okay, well, one hurdle, I think, and I don't even really think it's a hurdle as much as it's an opportunity for someone or some people, is that, you know, you go into any store today where they have computers and, you know, there's Macs and there's Windows. And, you know, I know that there's vendors out there who sell Linux, HP, Dell, they sell a lot, but it's kind of like you got to go ask for the guy in the back room, you know. It's not like you're going to get a flyer from Dell in the mail and it's all Linux. And so someone needs to start a company and they need to sell Linux systems, and that's all they do. And I know there are some out there, but, you know, nothing big. It's not like an HP or it's not like a, you know, a major retailer.
Walmart.
So if someone can do that, then, you know, you're going to, that's one big hurdle that will be overcome.
Definitely. How about businesses? Businesses are picking up, you know, some businesses are picking up on Linux.
I hear it more and more, too. You know, they use it, you know, they've used it for servers for years. And I've seen it firsthand in the corporate environment where 10 years ago they would not approve. And if you were one of the techies in the back with a Linux box, you could get in trouble. And then they gradually accept it when they were setting up corporate intranets and they wanted NT, and they'd say, oh, we want name brand stuff. You know, back then Linux was considered weird, and, you know, they didn't understand it. But it is, you know, they're all using it.
Right, in the back room. But I see increasingly now more and more desktop rollouts, too.
Yeah. I think it was AT&T. That's wonderful. I think AT&T just made some announcement just a few weeks ago that we're going to be Linux now.
Mm-hmm.
It was someone like that. I'm not sure if it was AT&T, but I think it was a big telecom company. But, yeah, you hear a lot of that, and you hear a lot of that in governments where, like, a large city in Germany or something will suddenly switch to Linux.
Right.
You know.
It's a lot more economical for them, too, you know. I mean, let's face it, one of the big pluses for Linux is that, you know, you don't have to pay a whole lot of money for it.
Especially
as compared to, you know, if you compare functionality down the board with Linux and other operating systems, you know, that's when you find out that you really are not paying a lot for it.
Right, well, and you're also, you're gaining the source code, and that's, you know, try to imagine trying to buy the source code to a proprietary product.
Sure.
You know, so that's something that's a huge value. You not only get the program free of charge or for a low cost, but you get the source code, and you can hire developers to extend it to your needs.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's absolutely something that, you know, businesses are finding that undeniably effective.
Now, Mike, right now, are you strictly a writer, or do you do other?
What was that again?
Are you strictly a writer, or do you have another job that you do on a regular basis?
Oh no, just writing.
Now, you have the Linux Cookbook.
You've written articles that I've seen on O'Reilly. What else have you written?
Other projects, written book, and I don't really want to give it away. Very, very different from the cookbook. And I've got another Linux book sleeve that, again, will be very different from the cookbook. Let's just put it that way.
Okay, so between the first and second edition of the Linux cookbook, when I looked at O'Reilly's site, they had a handful of articles that were written by you, but, you know, back in...
I'm sorry? You got cut out for a second.
Oh, sorry about that. I was looking on your information on O'Reilly's site, and you have the Linux cookbook and a bunch of articles that were written a few years ago. Have you written anything in between the first edition and the second edition of the Linux cookbook that, you know, we might be interested in letting everybody else know, so if they want to check out some more of your work?
Yeah, there were some articles on O'Reilly's site, and I'm thinking about probably doing more of that in the near future once I get these projects done. So, and, you know, I should probably also mention how to get the book at some point.
Sure,
go for it.
You know, you could get you can get it from your bookstores or from the publisher NoStarch.com. It's No Starch Press. Or I do get some directly, and so I sell the book directly at 75% of the cover price. So if any of your listeners are interested, you can contact me. If you go to DSL.org, I believe my email address is on there. I don't have anything really about the book right now. But you can email me direct, stutz@dsl.org, and that's spelled stutz@dsl.org. And, you know, I could do it through PayPal or whatever with free shipping.
That's a nice deal there. We have a question that came in from the chat.
Okay.
The first edition of the Linux cookbook used to be up on the Linux Documentation Project, and now it's been removed. Are you planning on putting a second edition up there, or has that just been...
Yeah, maybe not necessarily as part of the Linux Documentation Project, but I would like to be available. There were licensing issues which caused it to get pulled. So, and that's actually a problem with publishing on the Internet, is that if there's ever an error in the licensing, if someone, say, copies your book and republishes it, or copies your, get the licensing mixed up, well, then, you know, you have a lot to control, because there's a lot of copies out there with the wrong, with the wrong distribution or copying permissions. So that's a big issue in terms of online book publishing. But I'm very interested in it, and I'm tracking it, and actually that's part of a topic for a future book.
Oh. You mean that's part of a topic you're going to be writing? On a future book?
Yeah, right. About the future of the book and publishing online, because very definitely it seems the future of the book is digital and online, but there are a lot of things to work out in the interim.
So is that what ended up happening with your book on the Linux cookbook? Somebody was copying it from the and mixing up the license from off of the Linux Documentation Project?
Yeah, when it was out with the LDP, it was distributed with the wrong terms.
Oh.
So, you know, we had to amend that. But I'm definitely looking for a solution, and, you know, we'll see what happens with the new edition and, you know, other works to come after that.
All right. So besides yourself, who's your favorite Linux author?
Well, let's see. In terms of Linux books, I wasn't really happy with most of the stuff I saw out there, which is why I wanted to write this book in the first place. But I do have, you know, there's other computer book authors I'm interested in. Donald E. Knuth, I'm a big fan of his. Obviously, I used his typesetting system to design and lay this book out. And I like his writing and his books quite a bit. And there's a fellow, Ann Walker, wrote a book on Unix that's actually over 20 years old, but it's still relevant, and it's a good read and a good book. And in the new edition, I have an appendix in the back that lists you know, books that I think are valuable or worth reading.
So then, Patrick had a question. He's not here. I think he might be interested in this. For anybody who's interested in writing articles for Linux, I mean, what are the first steps that you think for today for an aspiring Linux book writer or aspiring Linux author to do?
Okay, for writing articles or books?
Well, he specifically said books, but...
I would say both.
Yeah,
yeah.
Both.
Okay. Yeah, both.
Okay. Well, for books, it's kind of a different ball game because the computer book publishing industry has been undergoing through a lot of changes lately, and computer book authors are generally not happy people these days, believe it or not. So I think you would want to decide if you're an aspiring computer book author. First of all, is this a hobby or a career? If it's a career, you'd be surprised at how financially it's not what you might think. And
I tell you what, as a technical support person, it's not as well off financially as you might think. You know? So we're all in the same boat.
And you know. I think that's true across the board with so-called technology jobs. And because 10 years ago, the computer book industry, a lot of people made a lot of money in it. And if you go to StudioB.com, they're agents for computer book authors.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a mailing list, the computer book publishing list. And if you are an aspiring book author, you really ought to join that list. And if you listen to these people... And they're all big names in the industry that you'd recognize. You wouldn't believe their stories, and these people can't run away from the industry fast enough. And so if this is just a hobby,
that doesn't sound very encouraging.
No, you don't. Well, I mean, if you have the spare time, you know, write for the LDP and release how-tos and guides, and people will read them and see them. But in terms of a career, people are really saying, "Gosh, this is a weird situation." And there's even heads of publishing companies who are saying computer book publishing is going to undergo a major change now, and you won't recognize it in a number of years. And basically, what probably happened was, you know, there was this big glut 10 years ago. Any kind of tech job paid very well, and computer books, you know, they couldn't print books about the internet quick enough. And now pretty much the market is glutted with all these books that are only meant to last about 3 months, you know.
Sure. They have to keep up with
the new technology. But if you have something to say that's going to be here for a while or be useful for a while, by all means, pursue it.
Outstanding.
So what do you see as being in the books, in articles, what's the direction you see that if someone wanted to start writing Linux articles, we'll go with that because that might be a little faster for somebody to get into. What topics would you recommend that they start looking at writing about?
I think topics that were specific and they covered more issues or subjects that users would need, as opposed to, say, you know, just how to install X, you know what I mean, or how to install Y, but how to actually accomplish a particular thing, you know, using Linux and software. For instance, I saw a discussion recently where people were talking about typography and how most of the big commercial typographers used Windows and the Mac tools. Well, why is that? And why is it that the tools available for Linux were not in wider use? Explaining what's available and how to use it in these particular subjects, I think, would be pretty useful.
You bring up a good point there. In the publishing environment, why aren't publishers using, why are they strictly, you know, Mac or PC, or Windows, Mac or PC, Apple or
right.
PC? And, you know, I'm surprised that you were able to bypass a lot of that and just send over the document that you had, the format in text, and they were able to
do that. It took a lot of negotiation with the publisher.
You know,
but But you'd be surprised. The printers are very open. If you have a PDF or a PostScript file that conforms to specifications, you know, that has the correct page size and, you know, it's formatted the right way, they'll take it, and it doesn't matter what you use to generate it. You could have written pure PostScript, but if it's the right specs, they'll print it.
Sounds good to me.
So, and I think more publishers really ought to use Linux with tech and, you know, the other tools that are available, because, you know, there's a lot more options available, and you can do a lot of very interesting things that you can't do on other systems.
Definitely.
You know, a lot of books today, they kind of look the same, and a lot of them look kind of cheap.
No.
You know, with...
My wife used to work for Rodale. And have you ever heard of Rodale Press?
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Yeah, she used to work for them. And some of the books that they come out with, holy moly, they just crank those suckers on the left. They have this machine that just puts a different picture on the page, and it's a brand new book.
but that's so common today. You go into a bookstore and flip through the books, and they all kind of look the same, and, you know...
They do. In a similar vein, you know, when we talk about and bringing it back to Linux as a desktop user operating system and proprietary formats, some of the stuff that we've been having to deal with regards to the show and just in general are in getting people to move over to Linux is proprietary codecs that are used on the web, like, for instance, Flash, even though Flash is available for Linux. Audio, which is primarily MP3 out there, or you get WMA files.
Right.
Or video.
Right.
Big competing QuickTime versus Windows Media File, whereas what we're left with maybe DivX, which is not as widely spread.
Right.
But what is your opinion on that, and how, as a community, can we move beyond that? I know we can get the codecs, maybe not legally, to view that stuff, but how can we encourage people to use... A more open codec and move away from QuickTime and Windows Media Files into an open codec?
Or is it just, you know, trying to encourage people to move Linux desktop environment, which would, you know,
compare
a lot of that stuff by itself, right?
Right. I mean, there's an answer right there. I mean, it is a predicament, and, you know, as a Linux user, well, obviously you don't see Flash on the web, you know, but personally I always looked at that as, well, I don't care. What is there in a Flash file to give me? You know, what am I missing? But there is a little bit of sacrifice you have to make. But, you know, look at Og Vorbis. There's one great example. When they started working on this, we're going to make a codec that's better than MP3, that's open source, and that's free and great. And you know, when you first announce something like that, people might be like, yeah, right, come on. But, I mean, look, Og is great now, and... That's all I use, and sure, there's a lot more hardware out there for MP3, but just give it a little more time, and I think, you know, with persistence, we'll see the same with video and, you know, other formats. And as open formats are developed and they're out there, I can't see how a proprietary format can hold out, at least, you know, in the long run.
I sincerely hope that's the case.
Yeah.
I sincerely hope that's the case. I really would like to see a lot more wide adoption of the open source codecs and the open source technology and things like that, as opposed to...
Well, we're seeing more with Og, I think.
Og is pretty widely accepted now, except for, like you said, on some of the... Some hardware,
yeah, like,
you know,
call it iPod.
Right.
We'll name it iPod. Yeah,
right. Yeah, you'll see it.
iPod, but
still, there's still some hardware problems, and you go to the store to get it. Like a problem, I wanted just an Og one, and you know, try finding that MP3. But then you see some of the radio stations that broadcast that, and I'm thinking of WCLV, which is a renowned classical station, and they initially were MP3. But maybe it was a year and a half ago, they also went Og. And that's great. I mean, they have nothing to do with Linux. They're not, you know, they don't have Linux radio programs or anything, but they they adopted this Purier and probably more cost effective for them, and now they're on the net broadcasting Hog.
That's great.
So I think we will see more of that. It's just, you know, there was a day when Diamond multimedia cards could not be used with Linux because they wouldn't release the specs. But as Linux got more popular, finally, you know, we were able to use them. So these things just take time, unfortunately.
Well, you know, speaking of that, you know, companies not releasing their specs.
Right.
You see, they release the specs. And this is, I see this a lot now in the wireless network adapter area, that a company doesn't release the specs, somebody takes the Windows driver and writes a wrapper for it so it'll run under
Windows. Right. Just wrap the Windows driver up around it.
So, I mean, do you think we see that more and more companies are adopting, are moving over to supporting Linux. Which is a good sign, I guess. I don't know where I was going with that.
Yeah. I have no idea where you're going with it.
Well,
I think that's a good thing.
It was going to be, you know, thinking like a couple of years ago. Do you think more and more companies will be? But it's, you know, I answered my own question because they are.
Yeah,
they are. I mean, the big Broadcom.
That's right.
Sure, and you know, just don't forget, and all these more and more and more often are probably guys running Linux.
That's right. That's what I do.
So, you know, you have internal influences in these companies as well.
Sure. You just, you know, make it up as you go along. Put a solution. That's the way it works for me.
Right.
Put a Linux box in there to fix everything, and then mention to them afterwards, oh, by the way, it's the reason it's working.
Right. I put it,
and it's worked for me like 8 or 9 times already, so it does work to do it that way.
Wow, yeah. So, Mike, what are your hobbies? I mean, what do you do besides write books about Linux and articles about Linux?
Try to figure out cool tricks and undocumented methods in Linux, you know? Seriously, it was obsessive, and as you can see with the second edition, you know, and the difference in size, it took a while to get information.
I hope my wife is listening to this, because she always rags on me about being in front of the computer all the time. I think probably you have me beat.
Yeah, exactly.
What is it, Mike? You prefer? We have to ask these questions of all our guests, right? We want to know what your desktop is like. Is it GNOME or KDE or WindowMaker or?
He's running Screen.
What are you
man.
Doing?
He's running Screen. That's it.
Just Screen, yeah. Multiple Screen instances.
You know? Okay, I'll tell you. I don't use any of that stuff. I've tried them all. I've seen them, and if someone's got something to recommend to me, I'll try it. But
XFCE.
In the end, I. What is it?
XFCE.
Okay. In the end, I, you know, all this stuff, they're all kind of the same in terms of, you know, you take the background image away and the icons away, and it's pretty much the core of it is the same. I kind of liken it as window dressing, and I'm interested in the architecture.
Right.
And if you think of all these environments over it, it all actually, technologically speaking, it goes back 40 years ago to this guy, Douglas Engelbart, at Xerox Park Labs. He developed this windowing system, and it was really in the middle of the 1960s.
Right.
And then a system called PostScript News came after that, and then probably have to ask Peter Salas, who wrote a book on the history of Unix, but it's kind of debatable whether or not Microsoft Windows or the X Windows system came first. I always used to assume that X was first, but Windows 1.0 might have actually preceded X. But really, all these systems, what I'm getting at is, you know, we had X through the 80s on Sunboxes and whatnot in the Linux 90s. They're all basically the same paradigm. And I'm really, really bored of that paradigm. I want to see something new, something truly, truly new and truly better. So in terms of X and what I use a window manager called Ion. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what the point of Ion is, it kind of makes X like a virtual console,
right,
but with the ability to have graphics, so that any window you're working on, the window is completely full screen. There's absolutely no background at all.
Isn't there another one?
Because when I'm
Isn't there another one sort of like that called, what is it, rat poison or something?
Yeah, rat something. Yeah, rat poison or something, yeah. I can't think of the name right now, but there's another one just
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm in my editor or when I'm looking at a website, I want the whole screen, my whole monitor, to be filled with that one window.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I like to use that one. And then you actually can have, 100 windows open, but at any one time, the screen is filled with just one.
Right.
I'm looking at the screenshots of it right now.
Yeah.
Have you tried messing around with any of the 3D window managers? What is it?
No, I've seen plenty of this stuff. But I mean, like the future of this is very interesting in terms of text display and the way we display program output on computers, because if you have very high res photographic imagery, you can do you have X terms and you have terms that are transparent, and a lot of these environments have transparencies and 3D, so you can display kind of like partially overlapping windows. But as you get more toward photographic quality, it's almost like looking into a movie screen. And if your screen resolution is good enough, you can display a lot more information on the screen than, what we see on these normal, on the window managers or in the environments today that are popular.
Right. I'm just waiting for them to come out with something where I can just jack it right in the side of my head, man.
Yeah.
Let's just do away with all the unnecessary stuff, and I can sit in my chair in a dark corner and jack it right into my head and be in good
right.
shape. Then, then you can get really detailed with stuff.
Right.
So do you do any gaming on Linux?
No, I don't.
Good man. That's what they make PlayStations for.
Yeah.
Right?
Somebody who went out looking for an Xbox.
No. I went looking for the game. That's what I wanted.
Almost bought an Xbox.
I probably would have purchased and bought. Where the hell did I come from? I probably would have purchased an Xbox if I had not found out that the game that I wanted in particular was available on another platform. So I just, sorry, Michael. It's an inside thing. I posted on my blog that I was looking for. I went out the other day with my wife, and I wanted to buy some kind of shoot 'em up game, using a light gun kind of thing. And I ran across House of the Dead, which looks really great. And I really wanted a shoot 'em up game. So I almost went out and bought an Xbox just so I could play this game. And then I went to a video store, and they said that they had House of the Dead 2, I guess, was actually available on... What was it? Sega Dreamcast. Yeah. So I got a Dreamcast instead so that I could play this, and it ended up costing me, of course, like 400% less than it would have if I bought an Xbox, and I didn't give any of my money to Microsoft. Cool, too. So, but
if you buy
the story behind
that. Well, I'll tell you, there's a product that Microsoft put out that I think is just the best. So
Bill Gates toilet paper.
What is it?
No, there was a book. It's a book, Microsoft Press, which I don't even know if they're around anymore. They published it in 1987, and it's a book called Computer Lib and Dream Machines by a guy named Ted Nelson. And it's a legendary book that basically every hacker has got to get a hold of. It's one of the old school, futuristic, philosophical computer proto-internet texts. And this guy self-published it back 35 years ago or so. And in 87, Microsoft Press, of all people, republished this book. And I just thought that was the greatest thing they ever did because it's a really intense book. So I always say, well, there's one thing that Microsoft did that's pretty good.
I'll take your word for it. They've I, you know, there's a couple of good things about Microsoft. One, they make a product that breaks so often that I have a job fixing it. Okay? So that's good. They make it so horrible that, you know, there's a lot of people that are employed around the world fixing their horrible product. And, you know, but that's a good thing. I could, you know, everybody's got to make money somehow. And two, even as horrible as their product is, they've sort of raised the bar on what kind
horrible.
Of yeah, what kind of no, but what kind of things that people want their computer to do. You know, so it gives other operating systems something to aspire towards. Like I want to do that same thing that Windows does, only I want it to work, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's, right.
It's something to aspire to, I guess. Then, of course, you know, there's the whole shrewd business thing. Like, if you really want to be a shrewd business person, modeling yourself after Microsoft, who has ripped people off for the last 20 years, is probably a good thing. But that's a whole different story right there, you know. Just my opinions, of course.
Xbox.
Shut up. I'm going to Xbox you upside the head. All right.
Big Emacs user, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I know how to use Vi, but in my daily life, it's Emacs. I actually added a whole bunch of material on Vi in the book.
I saw that.
Or
you know,
Vi.
After I read your section on Vi, I thought perhaps you were a Vi user.
No. That's interesting. There's
sit corrected, though.
I hear some people call it Vi, others Vi.
Well,
but,
I think in proper terms, it's Vi if it's just Vi, and it's Vim if it's Vi Improved, or Vi Improved.
Right, Vi Improved. Well,
but I don't really care.
Vi
one or the
is
other,
an interesting.
Actually.
It's an interesting program, though, and I could see if. If I used it all the time, I'd probably have all kinds of scripts and help files, you know, because it reminds me a lot of the RAND MH system for email.
Right.
In that, you know, you're always going to the shell and you have that ability, and it's an interesting program, but you know, most people I think either pick one or the other and they stick with it.
I believe you're right about that. Most people that are programmers normally gravitate towards Emacs, and administrators and stuff like that usually gravitate towards Vim or what have you.
You know, that's interesting.
And if they're really horrible,
true.
People gravitate towards Pico and Nano and Jed.
Or just Editor. Ed.
G-Edit.
Revive
Edit.
Ed. Now that's a man's program right there. Ed.
There's a, what is that, that distribution? Oh, what is that one? Frisco. Frisco. They have an editor on there. You fire that sucker up, and you're like, what do I do now? How do I get out? How do I change anything? What do I do? It's horrible. It's terrible.
Better off using, like, Cat and Echo to get your stuff
Cat,
done.
Yeah. Well, I saw someone actually, they made a simple editor out of, like, a command line that had, like, DD and Cat.
Yep.
And a couple of tools, you know.
That's the way to be. There's always a way around something, you know? You just have to,
absolutely.
That's
right.
The great thing about Unix.
There's more than one way to say it.
Right. That's the great thing about Unix. There's always, you know what I mean? There's multiple ways to do everything. And that way, if you're really stuck with something that you're locked out of, normally you can find another method to do what you need to get done. And that, as opposed to, like, the proprietary operating system way of doing things, is wonderful because... On Unix, you can do something. There's 15 different ways to do it, and they're all free. On Microsoft, there's one way to do it, and it costs you $900. You know what I mean? So.
Nothing with paying for
it. Linux is really, you know, the command line, it's really a language.
Yes.
So.
Absolutely.
You know, and so there's more than one way to say it.
That's the key right there. Learning. And that's where the Linux cookbook fits right
that's
in.
That's right.
Because if once you start learning the commands that you talk about in there, you could do amazing stuff with just pipes and all sorts of redirects and all, and it's just fantastic. You know what?
And regular expressions.
Regular expressions.
Expressions,
you know?
Yeah.
What I really, really, really like about the Linux cookbook is it doesn't focus four chapters at the start on installing Linux.
Yes,
that was really good. I'm trying to recall. Do you even discuss installing Linux at all? I mean, aside
no,
you just got to
purposely not.
Because that's been
no,
like
I,
one
I,
of the bugs up our butt in the last few shows we've been talking about.
Yeah,
that everybody spends
that's,
so much time doing
because
an install
that bugs
process.
Me too. I hate that because any book written and about how to install Linux is going to be outdated the day it goes to press. You know,
right.
And everybody is different. There is no way you're going to be able to tell people how to install Linux because there's so much hardware out there. There's so many combinations of hardware, so many distributions and versions. It's pointless. So, the book definitely it assumes and it tells you in the beginning what it assumes, but it assumes that you have Linux installed on your computer.
Right, a running Linux system. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah.
Do you read any of the Linux magazines that are put out, that are published?
Nowadays I don't. I years ago I subscribed to Linux Journal. I'm familiar with them.
See, what got me on the kick of this whole installation of Linux reviews is Linux Format last month published an article on a distro war where they reviewed 10 Linux distros, and I was kind of, I like to read that kind of stuff, reading the reviews, but it seems like the main focus that they talked about was the installation of it, how easy it was, how quick it was for, like, a new user, and then Linux World Magazine had an article talking about OS 10 and Gen 2 and Yellow Dog, or not Gen 2, Ubuntu.
The whole article was installing.
And it was all about installing. It's just like, I've had enough of these damn reviews, and all they talk about is installing.
It's one paragraph on the system.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is true.
Find some programs that work and tell us
how
to use them,
Yeah,
exactly. I've seen that so often, where you'll just see article after article on how to install this version, how this distribution. And what about actually using the system?
Right.
Oh, it's killing me. Is it OS News that has that series running?
What? How to install?
I think it's... Yeah, and they have... I think it's OS News. I'm not even sure. So I'm not going to commit to it 100%. But I think OS News has had this series running where they're doing installs, like articles about installs on every system you can think of. And it's just the same, It's just the same thing over and over. And they're beating the hell out of it,
It's like the only point of,
how
of,
many
of an OS
yeah.
is to install
How many
it.
Screenshots of F-disk can you take,
What goes in hand with that?
Yeah, the...
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead,
What's
Mike.
That?
I was going to say, what goes
I'm
in...
I'm sorry,
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
What I was going to say is, what goes ahead with that is, we've had a couple of groups around here that all they did at their meetings was installs. One month it was Mandrake, the next month it was Red Hat, and it just got... that's all it was. Maybe that's why we never do install calls, because that you just... they don't
They're addicted
anymore.
To it.
Right.
They're addicted to installing distributions.
There definitely
should be more articles on how to actually get things done and use the systems rather than, reviews of installations.
Now, when you're advocating or when you're looking for programs, right, to write about.
Yeah. Right.
Different programs that do different things on Linux or Unix. Do you gravitate towards any graphical applications for any specific window manager? Like, do you gravitate towards KDE type application?
No.
Or GNOME? Or do you really search for the X ones, you know?
No. My focus really is on the command line because I found that for so many things, it's the best way to get things done. Now, obviously, with certain types of image editing, you want to use something like the GIMP.
Right.
And that's not a command line program.
Right.
Well, for the most part, at least.
Mogrify.
And there are actually some very good image editing programs that do work on the command line, like the Image Magic Suite.
Right.
You can do all kinds of things, from scripts or whatever. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but that Ion Window Manager, the one that I use, when I do any kind of graphic work, it's actually easier to use another window manager like AfterStep or, you know, any of the more traditional ones.
Right.
Just because you're going to need more windows open at once.
Than just, you know, one like, on per screen, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Got
but, yeah, there are definitely, there are kinds of programs that you obviously can't use at the command line. And I talk about some in the book. Like, there's it's pronounced Sound. It's SND. It's for sound editing.
Right, which
and
is a cool
like
program.
The
yeah.
author, he said he wanted to make, like, the Emacs of audio editors. And, you know, that's not a command line tool.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there are different types of tools. Or, you know, command line or graphical. And, you know, maybe something else in the future, hopefully.
Definitely.
Hardcore.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go install another version of Linux.
Have you tried out Ubuntu? I know
heard a lot about it.
I know you said you're primarily a Debian kind of guy, and I won't hold that
right.
against you. Even though you should use Slackware instead, but that's okay. I'll let you slide this time because I like your book.
there's a lot of people talking about it now, so. And same with Gentoo, really, you know.
And Fedora. Fedora. There's a lot of people talking about
all that. Because Fedora Core 3 is out, right?
Yes.
Well, it's fairly recent. It's not, like, wasn't yesterday, but.
And 4. Everybody's like, 4 is going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread. I don't know.
It's all right. When they're still trying to Fedora 12 and Fedora 13, I'll still be running my Slackware. It'll still be running. It's okay.
Fedora. Mike, I don't know if I asked you this, but are you going to be at Linux World Expo in Boston?
No, I will not be there.
Okay.
Well, that's unfortunate because, you know, we could have given you a magnet or a business card or something.
Or
a button. Yeah.
A button.
You know, I think Usenix is coming up, is it not, in April?
Isn't it like... They're having it in, like, Georgia or some stuff like that this year? I can't even remember.
Anaheim, California.
Well, that's a little out of my driving range right there.
take a
break. So,
call up your publisher and tell them that you'd like your favorite tech show interviewers to accompany you to it. And see if we'll go for it.
Hey,
if that's
I'm
the case,
for
we'll
it,
go,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa. Mike's flying us out to, with the proceeds from the Linux Cookbook 2nd edition, Mike's going to pay for our trip to California.
Sure, right.
Thanks, Mike.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, right.
And
that's
he's really taking great. Our audience with us.
It's no problem.
All right. It's fantastic. Mike. We're gonna have to get going in a couple minutes because we have somebody who has some like very pressing news that they got to tell us. We're excited to hear about whatever this person has to say. I really appreciate you coming on and talking with us about.
Sure, it's my pleasure.
That was great.
Cookbook 2nd edition. It's a fantastic book. Even if you at all use any Linux and you have friends that use Linux, go out and buy copies of this thing. For yourself and give them to your friends. Did you buy a copy?
Yes, I did.
All right. So anyway, each one of us has a copy now.
Yep.
And there you go. Give your first edition away to somebody to get them going to start off with.
It's the teaser edition, yeah. Right? You can give them the first edition and say, yes, but look, the second edition is twice as big. More stuff.
No starch press. All right. Mike, I want to thank you very much.
Sure, thank you.
You have a happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And I'll tell my wife.
Yep, thank you very much. And, you know, anytime, any Wednesday night that you want to, you know, just jump on the horn and start yammering and babbling at the actual Linux users out in the universe, by all means.
Skype, give us a call.
We're more than happy to talk to you anytime you'd like.
Yeah, let us know if you want to come back on. You got stuff you want to talk about, you just want to shoot the breeze, want to jump in, whatever. Be glad to have you.
Okay. We look forward to
hearing from you again in the future and definitely be praising your book up and down.
Absolutely. Good stuff.
All right. Yeah, well, we'll be in touch and I'll be talking to you guys.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have a good evening.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Bye. All right. Mike Stutz.
Yeah. Mike Stutz. Good author, man. That was a good book.
I'm going to give Andrew a ring because he's got a...
Close to cutoff time here.
Now that we're on BinRev, we have to...
BinRev stuff, we got to close out at the correct time. That's all right, because my wife likes it that way anyway, so, you know.
Other listeners. It's ringing. Come on, Andy. Everybody's in wait. They came for Mike, and they'll stay for Andy. And I don't know what he's doing. It's okay, now it's ringing. I wonder how much money we have.
Hey,
there we go. This is you.
Hey.
No, this can't be right. Hold on a second, Andy. What?
Yeah. The internet's not all buffering. You guys are using Real Player.
Connect to BinRev.
Yeah, I was trying to spit thing. But anyway, I'll let you... Yeah, Big Kahuna here instead of me breaking the news. Yeah, he's staying. No, no, but he's going on. Hold on one second.
He sounds like Bender.
Yeah, hello.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello? This is cool.
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear us?
Hello?
Hello?
Guten Tag, wie geht es Ihnen? Here, you're so much better at this. You tell the story. He's horrible. All right.
It must be a college party
Andy,
thing.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. What happens on your end?
I don't know. How come you couldn't hear us?
I don't know. We were just sitting here going, hello, hello. And, you know, nothing happened.
I don't know. Anyway, yeah, I'm like touching the thing. Okay, anyway. Down here on Tuesday, we, meaning Matt and everybody down here is working, we opened the Open Store in Savannah, Georgia, the first brick-and-mortar Linux store completely devoted to Linux in the United States. So I thought that would be fairly interesting for you guys to hear.
Outstanding.
Because you kind of, like, broke it on your... Yeah.
So where's the...
I'll try and post some links.
Yeah, where's the links and the pictures and the stuff like that, man?
All right, let me start posting. Do you have any questions while I'm getting the link set up here?
Oh, no. Alan got so excited he had to leave to use the potty. Yeah. So, you guys...
I just figured I'd call in and tell you, and you guys might find it interesting compared to the normal crap that I usually talk about.
That's cool, man.
That is really cool. What is your store doing? I mean...
What's that?
Are you at the store right now?
I was kind of doing a little quick audio check in the very beginning because we're running off this 64-bit that I just set up, so I wasn't quite sure how it was going to work. Gen 2 on 64-bit is quite fun, I'll tell you that.
What's your store's name?
The Open Store.
The Open Store, that's right. And that's great. Have you had any customers yet?
Yeah, the depressing question.
Matt usually handles that. What's he saying? Hold on. All right, he's got... Yeah, hold on. All right, is he actually going to talk now?
We've got the Creative Coast here in Savannah, Georgia. We got to do some work for them, and I've got some other projects to do. But we got some work so far.
Well, that's great.
Now, is this like business stuff, or are you guys getting walk-ins and stuff like that? People want Linux on their PCs and that sort of thing?
Well, we do service, you know, as in support, building new machines, sell software, hardware, pretty much a little bit of everything dealing with Linux.
Outstanding.
And yes, we're open right now.
Outstanding.
For the next 9 minutes.
What is your address? We want to give that out in case anybody's in the area you want to come down and check it out.
That's right, the open store.
1701 Abercorn Street.
And that's in Atlanta, Georgia.
Or is it, didn't you say?
No, Savannah,
Savannah,
Georgia.
Right?
Savannah, Georgia. Savannah, Georgia. Now, are you,
yeah, this room echoes.
Now, are you a student down there also with Andy?
No. I'm just a guy that lives out here. I have a girlfriend that goes to SCAD, but...
So you have a girlfriend that's a SCAD?
That's not nice.
That
he said it!
All right, he hits the mic, so I'm back on. One of the other people who works here, Mary, she's a SCAD student as well.
Oh, okay.
Wow, so what made you decide to start, to open this store?
You're asking any questions, Matt? All right, hold on, Mary's going to hop on for this.
Okay.
Heyo.
How you doing, Mary?
I'm doing all right. One of the things that started this was that he was hanging out, taking a nice hot soak one night, and just kind of came to him in the tub. So we've been working on this for about 6-7 months now, and it finally just all came together in the past couple weeks. But we saw a niche in the community that needed to be filled and figured, you know what, we feel that now is the time to do it. It's gotten to that point where Linux is being used widespread enough that it's interesting and there's enough people that are sick of Windows, they want to try something different. So that's kind of what pushed it to go forward.
Awesome. Hey, you know, we should have women talk on the show with us more often because she just talked right on and sounded just, whoops.
Good job.
I didn't knock the mic over. Sounded just fine, you know. A lot of the guys get on the show and stutter and stuff like that. But.
Yeah.
Well, I got to also take into consideration, I've had a radio show before, so this isn't really that unusual.
So. Well, if you've met Dan and Alan, you wouldn't say that.
So now, is this running out of someone's house there? I see, because I'm looking at the pictures, or is this an actual... Is that a store there?
This is an actual... keep in mind, in Savannah, Georgia, we are a very historic community. Okay. What we're trying to do, Chris and Creative Coast, what they've been pushing is to bring Savannah into the 21st century, but not destroy the historic element. Mm-hmm. So where we are actually in is we're in an old Victorian house, but it's dual-zone commercial residential. So that's what we're trying to, you know, keep with the historic district. Actually, we became grandfathered into the historic district about a week after we procured the lease here. So we actually are in the historic district of Savannah.
Cool.
It's so nice there. It doesn't look like a store. It looks like a place you'd want to come in and sit down and hang out.
That's part of what we're trying to do here. We're trying to get, you know, business element going where people can come in, you know, test out different distros, get a feel for it, see if they're comfortable. We also brought a lot of our educational books in. We got all kinds of, you know, Red Hat Linux 7 books, Perl Cookbook, Python programming. I brought in a bunch of my art books and stuff for people to look over. So we also want to have, you know, educational element. SCAD is obviously, as a... Andrew said, this is a very large art community. I'm a visual effects major, so we have a lot of very techie people down here also. And we wanted, you know, people to feel comfortable coming in and hanging out a little bit. Phase two, we're going to actually have a LAN room / classroom set up in the back that we're going to be working on in the future. So people can come in and play games and maybe do some teaching. And we're working on resurrecting some of the lugs in the area. So if anyone's interested... Yeah, if anyone's interested in either doing the open store lug, or I know Bob finally got permission to get Slug back, but he's been too busy to really do anything with it. You know, we are trying to get the user groups back together, so if anyone's interested, you know, email us at the open store. Was it SimonTech@theOpenStore.net? Yeah, SimonTech@theOpenStore.net, which I think Andrew's going to put that up in your chat room in a second.
Great. Outstanding. It's always good to hear about new Linux goings-on, especially, you know, a historic moment like we actually get a storefront somewhere. That's good news.
That's beautiful. That is. So now, are you said you're going to offer training courses and stuff there?
In the future, yeah. Right now, we're just trying to get retail up and going. Obviously, we have the books that we have from our personal collections out for people to come in and get their hands on. But because not everyone has the money to go out and spend, you know, a couple hundred dollars at Barnes & Noble. So we just kind of pooled our collection together for people to come in and use us as a resource.
Mm-hmm. That's so nice. That is beautiful.
That's great. Well, keep updating us on the progress of things going on there. And, you know, as you guys get things together, send us some pictures and stuff like that. We'll make sure we get a mention on that kind of stuff. And hopefully some business will float your way. Because that's pretty cool.
All right. Well, I'm passing you all back to Andrew.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right. So that was the big news for you guys. I figured you might be interested. So
awesome.
I don't have anything else to say unless you want to blab on.
That's really nice. I mean, wow. That's a beautiful place. Now, Mary said that she was in the graphic design. Was that it? Or fine art? What was it? What did she say?
Visual effects.
Visual effects. Does she do all that on Linux?
What's that?
Is she doing all that on Linux now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She has a story if you want to hear it real quick.
That'd be great. Put her back on. We're done talking to you.
Get out of here.
That was cruel. All right. Well, to tell you guys kind of an interesting tale of computer lab fun down at SCAD, thank you, Zoe. But we brought a little schnauzer here. But anyway, we're actually running Shake, which is a very high-end compositing program by Apple, on Pentium 4-based Linux PCs right now, because we found out that Shake actually runs faster on a Pentium 4 or Athlon running Linux than it does on a G5.
Wow.
Cool.
Yeah, that's what the college had decided, because they asked us why, you know, a couple of people were curious, why are we running, you know, an Apple program on the Linux boxes instead of the G5s that are upstairs? And they go, well, they run faster down here. So, oh, okay. So... And we do actually have right now, I think they're using Fedora for the render farm. They were using Gentoo, and we do use cross platform and a lot of stuff. Like we have Houdini that you can run, Maya runs. They just brought Wine into Photoshop. I use Crossover Office at home for my Photoshop. So
you prefer Photoshop over to GIMP?
I don't want to get in that argument, but when you kind of... I explained this to people earlier today. They're like, well, you know, if you try it, like, yeah, I've tried it, but this is kind of what happens. I have the GIMP, or I have Photoshop running perfectly fine in Linux. So, you know, I could use the GIMP, but I have Photoshop working anyway, so I might as well just use my, you know, license that I paid for to go ahead and use it.
How did you guys get Shake to run on Linux?
It comes natively. The new Shake's native. You can buy it for Linux.
Oh, because I was just looking on Apple's website, and it just says G5 on OS 10.
It's native. If you get the Shake book, we actually have the Shake book. The CD that it comes with, the Shake book says Mac/Linux, actually on the Apple Pro book.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
That's cool.
So there's actually a lot of stuff that's already been ported.
Makes you want to go out and try it, except for I do what the hell to do with it.
same thing. Houdini runs native. Maya runs native. That's a real high-end 3D program. Pixar RenderMan. All the high-end stuff, because Hollywood switched over about a year and a half ago.
Right.
Yeah, at least a year and a half ago, because Hollywood's actually using Linux on most of their farms. So
yeah.
It's not, like I said, most people just don't realize how common it actually is being used.
Right. I know I have a friend or two that happened to work professionally in render farms in a couple of different studios, and they are actually using Shake on... I thought originally that they were talking about running it on 64-bit machines, but perhaps I'm wrong and they're running it on 32. I don't know, but I know they're running shake on under Linux instead of on Macs, which I thought was pretty cool.
Maybe one show we can have. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right now, the only drawback we're having is with the QuickTime movies, but it's not it's something that's not unfixable. So.
You mean?
But mostly, to be honest with you, they render out better if they're TIFF sequences anyway, so it's not really that big a compromise.
Right.
Maybe one day you could come on the show and talk about some of those things. Because, I mean, it's really interesting.
I'd be
you and, I know Andy's into that too.
He's animation.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Because we're running out of time because we're going to get cut off on BinRev and they don't want us to go over. Because then everybody, they get... Yeah, we just got to get going.
We got to
get going. Mary, I want to thank you very much for coming on.
A problem.
But I'll talk to Andy, and maybe we can arrange a time that you guys can come back on in the very near future, in a couple of weeks, and talk more about the store and more about the stuff that you're doing, because I think it's really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
All right, you guys have a good night.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody. Looks like we're running out of time, or possibly even...
We
have run out of time on BinRev. But if you're still listening to us on our stream, or you're catching us on the BinRev repeat or something like that, please, we just want to give you thank you, big thank you once again, listening to us all the way up through this show, episode 70, which is... Long for us.
770.
And will we, the big question is, will we or will we not have a show next week? Probably. Will it be live? I don't know.
We'll see.
Maybe. It depends on how we're doing after our 6-hour road trip. But anyway.
Well, you know what? We are already over our BinRev time.
Yeah, we're way over BinRev time.
We want to thank everybody. Mike for coming on.
Yes.
Andy.
That was
Mary,
cool.
The people down there.
And we have some more cool interviews coming up, too.
Yeah,
some of the stuff that we're getting
store,
at the...
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So, it's getting...
Getting
shows
back on.
Yeah, man. Show's getting better and better every damn week. So, keep listening. You know, and make sure you tune into us because, like, our interviews are way better than Lug Radio's.
And so the war begins.
Dun, 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 dun. Here
we
go.
We gotta close it up because we're already three minutes
it.
Past time.
Okay, listen, everybody. Thanks again for listening to this edition, 70 of the Linux Link Tech Show. I'm Link.
Dan.
Good night.
Play it away, Link. Fly it away.
Good night.
Linux Link Tech Show.